This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. In the last days of its term, the United States Supreme Court did something that rarely happens in wartime. The court rejected an administration's claims of virtually unlimited power. Among other rulings, the court says the Bush administration has to give reasons for detaining many people at the Guantanamo Bay Naval Base in Cuba. Lawyers for some suspects have already gone to court. Here's NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg.
The court ended the term by firmly rejecting the Bush administration's contention that it had the right to detain American citizens and foreigners indefinitely without charge, simply because those detainees were labeled by the executive branch as enemy combatants. First, the court ruled that the detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, can challenge their detentions in the U.S. courts. And then, in the case of an American citizen captured on the battlefield in Afghanistan and held incommunicado for over 2 years here in the U.S., the court ruled by a surprising 8-1 vote that he is entitled to know the charges against him and, with the help of a lawyer, to rebut those charges in court. While four members of the court, including its most outspoken conservative, Antonin Scalia, would have released Yasser Hamdi immediately, four others gave the government more leeway to prove that Hamdi should be detained. Writing for those four, though, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor sent a clear message. A state of war, she wrote, is not a blank check for the president when it comes to the rights of the nation's citizens. Tom Goldstein of Stanford Law School practices regularly before the U.S. Supreme Court.
What we learned in the national security cases is that a conservative judicial philosophy isn't the same thing as a conservative president. The conservatives on the Supreme Court still believe in the role of the courts, that they do have the final say. And so here the strongest voice for the judiciary and the biggest pushback against the precedent came from Justice Scalia, perhaps the most conservative justice.
For the Bush administration, the decisions were a rude shock. A Pentagon document obtained by NPR and dated just 3 days before the decisions were announced set out a public relations plan based largely on the assumption that the administration would prevail in court. In the event of an unfavorable ruling, the memo says, be prepared to have supporters decry this miscarriage of justice. In the end, the court's decisions were so overwhelmingly against the president that the administration remained largely silent in response. Former Bush Deputy Assistant Attorney General John Yoo, now a professor at the University of California, argues nonetheless that the administration won more than it lost.
I think the government won an affirmation of its basic approach to the war on terrorism, that it is a war.
I think that Professor Yoo is misreading the Supreme Court's decision.
Ohio State University Professor Mary Ellen O'Connell.
The three detainee cases together stand for the principle that the president does not have the right to indefinitely detain persons whom he has labeled to be enemy combatants in the so-called war on terror.
Legal scholars of all stripes seem to agree with that assessment. Here's the University of Chicago's David Strauss, editor of the Supreme Court Review.
To the extent what the executive branch is trying to say is there's a war on terror, this changes all the rules, we have to approach these things differently. The court didn't buy that.
And here's Harvard's Charles Fried, who served as Solicitor General in the Reagan administration.
The message is that the government cannot stick a feather in its cap and call it macaroni. I mean, it can't just say this is national security, this is war, and so we can do whatever we want.
University of Virginia Law School Dean John Jeffries agrees that the administration's position was, in his words, absurd, but
the government won all they could reasonably have expected to win, because all the Supreme Court requires of the government is that they give notice of the basis for regarding someone as an enemy combatant and some fair opportunity for the detainee to rebut that classification. And that's a very minimal standard. It's certainly a long way from what you would expect in a criminal trial, for example, where the government would have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt specific conduct that violated U.S. law.
Professor Yoo, the former Bush administration official, however, contends that a majority of the Supreme Court did uphold the administration's right to detain enemy combatants in what the administration calls the war on terror. Yoo also sees the court as buying into the concept of the war on terror as a war that's recognized in the traditional sense. Others do not, noting, for example, that Justice O'Connor's opinion speaks repeatedly about the hostilities in Afghanistan and not an abstract war on terror. The distinction is important since not all the detainees in Guantanamo, for instance, were picked up in Afghanistan. Many, like Harvard's Charles Fried, say that the administration lost because it simply pushed the envelope too far with its claim that the courts had essentially no role to play.
I think it was a case where the judiciary was being provoked. It was a fist in the eye.
Stanford Law School Dean Kathleen Sullivan says the tendency to push too hard was evident elsewhere.
The big story about this term is that the government's lawyers took aggressive litigating positions, arguing for executive discretion and executive secrecy, and they got socked back by the Supreme Court every time.
The Bush administration came into office vowing to recapture power for the presidency, and the leader of the charge was Vice President Cheney. But when the administration took extraordinary steps to exclude the vice president's Energy Task Force records from court review, it fell short of an affirmative ruling. Walter Dellinger, who served as Solicitor General in the Clinton administration, agreed with the Bush administration on this one.
I think the Cheney case is an example of how the court has become very wary of claims of executive authority. I personally thought that the administration should have won more.
The Cheney case was one of several important cases in which the court backed away from making a decision on the merits. Another case in which the court used technical grounds to avoid ruling was the case testing the constitutionality of the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. Pepperdine Law Professor Douglas Kamek.
There's a certain teasing aspect of the term, a peekaboo kind of aspect, if you will, where the court tiptoed up to momentous issues or at least highly controversial issues and stepped away.
In contrast, though, there were cases where the court went further than anyone expected, as when it ruled that the sentencing schemes used in many states and by the federal government are likely unconstitutional. The decision was one of only five this term in which Justice Sandra Day O'Connor dissented. More often, in the closely divided cases, O'Connor was critical to the winning side, as she was in the court's decision upholding the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law. As UVA's John Jeffries puts it,
it's still Justice O'Connor's court.
Duke's Walter Dellinger observes that O'Connor is the opposite of an absolutist.
Justice O'Connor votes with the court's conservative justices in the initial forays, but then holds up her hand, blows the whistle, and says, stop, now you're going too far.
An example is O'Connor's support for states' rights, which she tempered this term in her vote to uphold a federal law requiring state and local courthouses to be accessible to the disabled. Harvard's Charles Fried contends that since O'Connor's critical fifth vote in Bush v. Gore, she has seemed to go out of her way to seek a non-ideological path.
Maybe Bush v. Gore gave her room to worry. She has taken a very pragmatic, political, not in the bad sense, but political in the sense of accommodative, pragmatic, practical point of view.
And her partner in that, observes Fried, has been Justice Stephen Breyer, a Clinton appointee. The result, say many scholars, is that the conservative agenda, be it religion, gay rights, affirmative action, or national security, has ended up stalled or in reverse. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.